What's up, everyone? This is the Hillside Ventures Podcast. I'm Shivam Patel, here with a very special guest, Professor Greg Riley. Greg is the head of the Management Entrepreneurship Department at the University of Connecticut, and I have had the privilege of being taught by him through Hillside Ventures. It's truly been a pivotal experience for me, not only for me, but all the other students that have been able to kind of be under his wing. I was there for around a year and kind of this semester continuing the podcast, which has been super cool. A little bit about Greg is UMichigan, getting his PhD at Wisconsin, and then kind of moving along to becoming the head of the Management Entrepreneurship Department at UConn, as well as being the professor for Hillside Ventures. So with that, I'll give Greg a moment.
Thank you, Shivam. Great to be here. And it was wonderful having you in class. We miss you, not having you in class every week now, but we're glad you're continuing the podcast, and I'm excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, for sure. I guess overall, just kind of seeing your journey and kind of where you were in college and kind of where you are now, I'm curious to learn a little bit more about your environment that you grew up in. What molded you into the person you are today? Like, what developed you in your path?
Sure. So I grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, a college town, kind of the quintessential college town, as the son of a business school professor. So as much as I tried not to become a business school professor, I did end up becoming one. So So what molded me there? I used to joke that I had a financial calculator in my crib with me. So all of the finance stuff seems very natural to me, like the calculating NPV. And I've been helping my son study this the past couple of weeks for a class he's taking, basic accounting and finance. So it's kind of good to stretch those muscles, even though I am now in management and entrepreneurship. So I don't get to practice my finance quite as much. But background-wise, what else shaped me? I got an MBA back when more people did them full-time, I think, than today. Went back to Michigan for that. Went overseas before that for a few years. That was a great experience, working in a big company in New Zealand. Became a rugby fan. Shout-out to the All Blacks, who finished second in the recent World Cup. I don't know if any of your listeners follow that, but they were that close. Did an MBA at Michigan, went out to Silicon Valley at the kind of the beginning of the internet boom. And that was an exciting time to be there. Your listeners and you may be wondering why anyone would leave right before everybody seemed to get rich out there. And sometimes I wonder that myself. Started my own startup called Measure.net. It was focused on helping big companies figure out what kind of strategic focus they should take. And from there, I was mostly doing management strategy work of that professors do. So I should go get a PhD and become a professor for real. So I did. And got a first job out of that program was UConn, and I've been here ever since. I'm very proud to be department head now for the Boucher Management and Entrepreneurship Department. And I've been doing that now for 4 years. And I love leading a great, great group of people here, both the faculty and the students that we have in the School of Business.
That's great to hear. Thank you for diving a little bit deeper into your journey and kind of how you ended up to where you are now. I think since we're all kind of around that, you know, college age, we're still in college for the most part. I think it would be really cool to hear a little bit more about your time at Michigan and kind of how that helped shape your career and kind of your personal growth through those 4 years, or kind of how that helped propel you forward.
Sure. I was a math major. And I did not take my undergraduate education as seriously as I should have, would be the main theme. So, in retrospect, I didn't really apply myself too much. I'd rather talk about my MBA because that was when the light went on.
Yeah, sure.
But I think it's an important, it's a reasonable lesson. And I think I bring this to now working with students. Different people and students find their passion and their studiousness and their energy at different times. And I think that we should leave room for that. So I was not your A student as an undergrad. I was getting by doing, you know, searching out interesting things that I thought were enjoyable, fun, interesting, meeting new people and trying to kind of understand all the various options instead of being focused on getting good grades. And I think it is important on the one hand to pay attention to grades, but there are other paths to success, especially for young folks. So, you know, the most important thing is curiosity and finding out what you're interested in, trying lots of things until you do, and appreciating that different folks get to their scholarly focuses at different times. I spent 2 years in New Zealand and then came back to do an MBA, and the switch kind of turned on for me that I really wanted to be a great student, and suddenly I was ready and motivated and was going to ace every class and really throw everything I had into it. Whereas earlier I was a much more distracted student. So.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense to where, you know, it might not have went the ideal way that you might have wanted in the beginning, but you were able to refocus and kind of repivot towards the MBA. I guess like with the concept of an MBA or just kind of your general views, having gone through that process, having that experience, and now having, you know, that title of having an MBA, what would you say that it's a game changer now? Or like, what are your thoughts on it like present day?
Yeah, it's trickier now. You have to appreciate that as an in-state student at Michigan, which was at the time always top five in the world. It was top two when I went in. Northwestern and Michigan were the two that kept vying for it every year. It still only cost me $20,000 for the 2 years. I was able to pay for my MBA with the money I had earned in the prior 2 years, free and clear. I had extra money. And wow. And so the calculate, right?
Yeah.
That same thing costs now, I don't know, what is tuition up to? $80,000 a year at the top schools. So it's really hard for me to compare the investment. It was an absolute steal for us at the time. Now, again, that was in-state tuition. That's not how it is in too many places anymore. But, I was earning $40,000 a year the prior 2 years, and then I went in and it only cost $20,000, $10,000 a year. So that was a really good deal. And the network of people that I met was incredible. And that's definitely one of the reasons you do it. At a top school, you want to go, and you're going for the network. You're going for the faculty that you can learn from and work with. And I think some of the same things. I met my wife in that program, so it was an excellent deal.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's completely different now that you put that a little bit more into perspective in terms of the price and kind of the viability there. But as you mentioned, I think the network is a huge consideration in terms of anything nowadays. It's just, I feel like it's more of a relationship game as time goes on. And just kind of like who you know and kind of how you can best utilize your network into different opportunities or just kind of coming together to create something better. So I guess that's a perfect segue, is coming together at UConn and kind of seeing what you can create there. This is the Hillside Ventures podcast. I definitely want to discuss the inception, the creation of Hillside, and your reflections throughout your journey. But before we do that, let's just talk about kind of the story of how things got started with you kind of leading the class, in a sense.
Sure. So when I was new to the department head role, we had a student named Noah Sobel Pressman who started agitating effectively for we should have one of these. And he persuaded David Noble to sponsor him. And they came to me and said, can we do this? And I said, yep, sounds like a great idea. You know, have at it. And so they got a small group of students together. And it's how we like to pilot things. Let them go and start figuring things out with a small group first. That's a great first step. We're doing that now with a couple of new initiatives, the STEM Startup Fund of Hillside Ventures, smaller group, open to kind of new ideas and taking as the first class period, you know, figuring out how it's going to work. So that group, they met for a couple of semesters as more of an independent study with David Noble. And then once we secured the financing, working with, you know, Michael Van Sandbeck at the foundation, and the dean's office here, we closed the financing and got ready to, let's see if I can get the timeline right, because I think that we closed the financing and then that was like halfway through the spring of, gosh, it's going to be like 2020, I think. Yeah, because we started out fully online.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had to, at the end when we were doing it, we went from being in person briefly to then being online. We went the next fall in a fully online. That's when I was started being in the classroom with the class. David Noble and I co-taught, I think, for the first semester. And then I took over fully and have been doing it since. I now have Jack Navarro working with me. We've grown from a small group the first semester that we were sort of official and doing it. We probably had 15 folks, and we've clicked up into the mid-30s now in the Genesis Fund, and now we have 10 folks in the STEM Fund, and both of those are going to grow next year a little more.
Great. I mean, just kind of my reflections throughout, I mean, I would say for someone who hasn't had traditional VC like experience, in a sense, you did an amazing job leading the class and being able to help us realize what we need to do in order to source companies, talk to different founders, and kind of get that process set up so then we're able to be more successful at the end of the day. I guess Hillside Ventures, one thing we've expanded in terms of STEM Fund, that's more opportunity for students and kind of a different area to where you know, we're able to get different exposure in terms of earlier stage STEM focused startups within, you know, the UConn ecosystem, et cetera. I guess it would be really interesting to hear if you're able to kind of talk a little bit about those other initiatives that you're planning for, kind of stuff in the future that you're looking to do to kind of increase the exposure or kind of teachings that you have to offer.
Sure. I think it's important before we talk about that to go back to the philosophy of Hillside Ventures. It's a very different learning experience and a model. And so a couple of things about it. Number one, students can take it multiple semesters. We have three different classes, but the students taking those classes are actually in the room together at the same time doing the different roles. So we have a new analyst role. They're in MENT 3742. We have a more senior associate role that's MENT 4741, and then we have a leadership class 4742. When you're new analyst, you're learning the ropes, you're figuring out how it all works. It's like a fire hose of new information, but the expectation is not that you're going to be able to find a number of deals, do the analysis yourself. You're an apprentice to the folks who have a little more experience. The second semester folks in 4741, they're really the star producers. They've got a semester of watching somebody else, and now they're going to be the ones who are going to find the best deals, know how to do the analysis, be savvy at finding experts who can test their thinking and help refine it, and then present to the board. The final group, the 4742 students, they're in a leadership role where we actually ask them to pull back on direct deal analysis and sourcing, and to focus on becoming and learning to become leaders. And that's a whole different set of learning. So there's another philosophy in this class that is about learning through getting repetition, trial and error effectively, to be able to, instead of the normal path, which is don't do something until you know how to do it, which is reasonable to say we need to put all the foundations in place of learning.
Yep.
In this class, you know, we're bringing people in sophomore, early junior year who haven't had a chance to have all the business school classes yet. And we're kind of giving them a quick education in the whole range of business analysis and sourcing, and they're getting the understanding through seeing a lot of deals and doing and watching a lot of analyses and participating again and again to say what makes a company successful, what makes a successful leadership team, which strategies tend to work. How can we understand financial models that seem to get accepted by the board? So that's a distinct way of learning. Another thing about this model is then the relationships. Because we're in there for multiple semesters, I find myself having much deeper relationships with the students, and the students having much deeper relationships with each other. And I would ask you, since I have you here, is that true? Is this a source of some good, deep relationships for you compared to regular classes?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it forces, it doesn't really force you, but in a sense, it really encourages you to collaborate in a team, because this is a team at the end of the day. Hillside as a fund, we're working with each other in order to reach the common goal of trying to find the best startups or kind of the best investments that we can. And by doing that, we are then collaborating with each other, forming deeper relationships, spending more time doing the work. And so once we do that, we're bonding at the end of the day. So I definitely attest to that point. And especially we get to know you a little bit better, just kind of through osmosis and just being around that environment.
Yeah. And I do think that I'm seeing the students are friends, and you know, you work on teams in all classes. And you might even have a semester long team that you're doing a project with, but this is so much more. This is much more like being in a job. And in fact, we run class like a business meeting. Like, we've got an agenda every day. It's collaboratively run. It is student led. So as much as possible, we put onto the students the leadership of what are we doing next? What are our priorities right now? How are we going to reach our goals? And are we doing the right set of things? The students in the last few semesters have spent quite a bit of time creating the organization, creating the processes. We created a database, and we ran through multiple iterations of that, where we started off with kind of a messy, things are all over the place, to moving to some spreadsheets, to moving to Airtable, which was a little bit fancier, and now we have a much, much more effective system that we use. Zoho Begin as our CRM and deal flow manager, and we're using Teams, and we've got processes to where you wouldn't even believe it if you haven't been into the system lately, Shivam. You can find things like that. Like, we're a really much more professional shop, and that learning has been really valuable. And again, it's all driven by the students with our guidance, making things better for the next group who will come in. And so there's a real pride, I think, with the folks who have been a part of it, and a desire to leave it better than you found it.
Amazing. I mean, I couldn't have said it any better myself. And like, as you alluded to, it definitely is more effective. I've seen a glimpse of it. It's definitely a lot more improved since I've been around. But yeah, that's mainly kind of what I wanted to get at. I guess lasting things, in case you have anything else.
Yeah, let me just expand on that a little bit. The funny thing about feeling like we're so much better is we also know that we have so much further to go. And so my great hope is that somebody next year kind of laughs at how we did it this year and like, oh, we're so much better now still. And we want to keep increasing that continuous improvement mindset is really important. You asked earlier about expanding opportunities, and that's also very important. You know, there's no reason why more students can't have these opportunities, and so that's what I'm working hard to find ways to do. Let's get more different students in, and getting this connection to faculty, and we can do it across multiple topics, and we're excited to share it and grow it.
Yeah. With that, do you have any ideas of how students that might be tuning in can help you create kind of those opportunities, kind of share their opinions or start doing things now to lay a good foundation so that when these opportunities do arise, they're more than well prepared to, you know, go ahead with them?
Sure. I mean, I think I would say, if this sounds good to you as a way of learning, this idea of student-led, this idea of deep relationships, multiple semesters. Oh, and by the way, real world, I didn't mention that, but one of the most important things about our model is we're really doing this. We're really investing. And when we raise the stakes like that, when we know we're doing it for real, it makes a big difference, right?
Yeah,
there's real money on the line. This is not a test. This is a real experience. And so if students have ideas about real things that they would like to be doing, preparation for being out in the world, and come see me. You can find me in the business school.
Yeah, for sure. I guess with that, that concludes everything for me. Do you have any parting advice for the audience, for the students that are tuning in?
My parting advice is, let your curiosity drive you. And it's not only about getting an A in the class. These are the years where you should make sure you take the opportunity to explore. And then when you do find something that interests you, dive in and give it all you've got. The students who are working on Hillside Ventures, not all of them, but a good portion of them, spend an incredible amount of time at this because it's really enjoyable and interesting. And they want to know more. And they see that this is like, what better opportunity than to practice here before you get to your job, before the stakes become a little higher. We've sent students around the country to go to conferences. There are rewards kind of for diving in and committing yourself to really spending enough time and effort to become a little bit expert, and you can go out and then into the world. And I hear from everyone who goes on job interviews that they get started talking about their experiences at Hillside Ventures, and the recruiters eat it up because nobody has great experiences like this. I don't know if you, did you ever travel with Hillside Ventures to any of the conferences?
Not particularly Hillside, but kind of within the management department, I would say.
Yes. So, that my advice, yes. Let your curiosity lead you. Don't forget to explore and do things other than study for the next test. There's so much interesting, mind-growing activities that you can do here in all sorts of different categories, and don't be bound in by, you know, for example, I am not a business student. Well, we take students from all over UConn. We love having students with different perspectives, and you can join Hillside Ventures no matter what your major.
Thank you. Thanks again, Greg, for coming on the podcast. Audience, if you have any questions or ideas about the podcast, please feel free to reach out. You can stay updated with us through this podcast, our newsletter, and our social media at Hillside Ventures. But with that, we appreciate your time in listening to the Hillside Ventures podcast. This was Shivam Patel here with Greg Riley, and we hope you have a great rest of your day.